The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
She's often referred to Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, for whom she clerked, as her hero. I understand that he reciprocated by calling her Shorty. Our Solicitor General and my friend, Elena Kagan.
Through most of my professional life, I've had the simple joy of teaching, of trying to communicate to students why I so love the law. Not just because it's challenging and endlessly interesting, although it certainly is that, but because law matters.
Red light for Nova baby in black robes. I love the law.
All right, I'm going to begin every show this week with a small prayer. Dear God, I pray for the strength to be strong for America and the wisdom to speak it. Welcome to the Savage Nation, Blue Monday. As an ideologue, which I am, you would expect me to oppose the appointment of a radical leftist red diaper dopa baby to the Supreme Court, and I shall not disappoint you. This woman, Kagan, is a radical leftist out of touch, not only with mainstream America, but with perhaps the entire Democrat Party. Here we go again, and let me put this Elena Kagan nomination for the Supreme Court in context. On my website, the headline is, Obama's judgmental non-judge picked for Supreme Court. Make no mistake about it, there is a paper trail. Although the fifth column in the media is saying there is no paper trail and we don't know where she stands, they're lying. They're part of the Obama spin machine. There is a paper trail. Shall we begin together? Now, she was born in New York City, which unto itself is suspect. We understand she was raised in New York City, probably to radical leftists, red diaper dopa babies, and she went to Hunter College, a well-known radical left-wing university. I went to Queens College, a sister college. It was infiltrated with communist teachers back then. All right. But millions of kids went through those schools and came out sane. Kagan then earned an AB in history from Princeton University, summa cum laude. Terrific. But that's where we have to start looking. At Princeton, Kagan wrote a senior thesis entitled, quote, To the Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City, 1900 to 1933. In other words, she wrote an appeal to socialism back at Princeton. Now, we all know that she went on to bigger things. She joins the faculty of the University of Chicago Law School in 1991. She becomes a tenured professor in 1995. But at Chicago, Kagan published a paper on the regulation of hate speech. In other words, she's against the First Amendment unless it agrees with her left-wing perspective. Now, who was it who appointed Kagan to become dean of Harvard Law School in 2003? None other than the same man who gave us the stimulus program. None other than the man who orchestrated TARP, none other than Lawrence Summers, appointed Kagan as the first dean of Harvard Law School, female dean of law school in 2003. Now, what did she do as dean of the law school? While dean of the radical left-wing Harvard Law School, Kagan supported barring military recruiters from campus because she believes that the military's don't ask, don't tell policy discriminates against gays and lesbians. Okay? Now, you say there's no paper trail? Let's go to the next step. And this one you're not going to believe. From 2005 through 2008, Ms. Kagan was a member of the Research Advisory Council of the Goldman Sachs Global Markets Institute. That alone should disqualify Kagan. She was an advisor to Goldman Sachs between 05 and 08, and you want her on the Supreme Court? Let's put this in context, all you left-wing wing nuts. Here is a woman, big sis Kagan, who he wants to be the next radical feminist on the Supreme Court. He's already picked one radical feminist for the Supreme Court, Sotomayor. Now, this time he's picked a real prize. As I said, she tried to kick the military off the Harvard campus when she was dean of the law school because of the don't ask, don't tell. And to give you an idea of her orientation, she took money from Goldman Sachs just like her boss Obama did. Now the empty skirts in the media are saying that she doesn't have much of a paper trail that would reveal her views on issues. But as again, I want to remind you, her senior thesis at Princeton was entitled To the Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City. Kagan is a New York City radical Marxist lawyer through and through. Now, in spite of her Marxist background, we know that Obama is replacing a liberal with another liberal. So this will not immediately change the ideological content of the Supreme Court. But what is even more worrying is Kagan's complete lack of judicial experience. She has never been a judge. She is a judicial nonentity. The same was true of Harriet Myers, whose nomination by George Bush in 2005 I also opposed. In fact, it was I, Michael Savage, and the Savage Nation who was so outraged by George Bush's pick of Harriet Myers that conservatives made their anger known to the White House and Harriet Myers' nomination was withdrawn. Of course, if it's up to the weak-kneed Republicans in the Senate, she'll probably be ushered right in. Lugar, Kyle, and Coburn, supposedly all solid conservatives, all voted in favor of her nomination as Solicitor General, as did the Rhinos, Gregg, and Collins and Snow. So don't count on the Republican Party to save you from Kagan or even fight against her. Obama seems to be saying that because she's a judicial nonentity, this makes her a well-rounded nominee. But he already has Christina Romer. He already has Sonia Sotomayor. He already has Janet Napolitano. There's no question that Obama's organization is well-rounded indeed. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Dear God, I pray for the strength to be strong for America and the wisdom to speak it. If you care to comment on Elena Kagan as a red diaper dopa baby lawyer from New York City, someone raised over, let us say, distrust of America, to be very kind, somebody who spent her entire life dying to become a lawyer, then dying to become a law professor, and now, of course, to become a Supreme Court justice so she can reshape America in her own image. God help us all. Mark in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike, I just want to remind you something, too. If this horrendous creature, by the way, she's probably one of the even uglier.
Well, let's not comment on how her appearance is, because although I find it personally grotesque, there are many who find it attractive. And so we'll leave that out of it. Let's avoid that. Let's talk about her radical Marxist policies. Let's talk about the fact that she has a long paper trail that the media is saying doesn't exist. It's as long as is her career as a lawyer. So what do you have to offer that's new, Mark? Anything?
Right. If she is confirmed, and unfortunately I believe the Republicans are going to let it go, she will be, all the ones on the left will then be from New York City. And
all right. Everyone on the left will be a red diaper dopa baby on the left. Now, there's another thing to remember. The Republicans did this to us once before, and it cost us plenty. They took a radical head of the ACLU's law department, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, never qualified to be on the Supreme Court, and yet she was ushered in by the Republicans then. You understand how dangerous this is? Do you understand where we are standing? Well, let me give it to you another way, Kagan in context. Many of you do not understand what I am saying. Many of you do not understand that this woman is a red diaper dopa baby, left-winger, Marxist, whatever you want to say. But you don't understand yet how dangerous she is. So I'll put it in context for you. Make believe a conservative right-wing candidate ran against Obama, but he ran as a centrist and faked America. And that this radical right-winger who faked as a centrist becomes president. Now, 18 months later, this right-wing president, his popularity is in the toilet 18 months later because people found out he's an extreme right-winger. So he picks for the Supreme Court a former member of the Ku Klux Klan or a lawyer for the Ku Klux Klan or a lawyer for one of the right, far-right fringe groups in the United States of America, and no one's going to ask him his positions on anything? People are going to say there's no paper trail of this right-wing lawyer? So the man has totally opposed gay marriage, let's say, in his entire background. That would not come up during his confirmation hearing? Well, let's say he wrote a paper while at the University of Alabama in praise of the fascist movement in the United States of America in 1930 to 1935. That wouldn't be part of his paper trail? Now I'll ask you another question. Do you think any of the supine Republicans will ask Elena Kagan where she stands on gay marriage? This, to me, is a pregnant issue, pardon the pun. It's an important issue. 18 states have put it on the ballot. 18 states have rejected gay marriage. Don't you understand what Obama's doing here? Don't you see it as clear as it is? What's wrong with you, stupid people? I'll be back.
Savage.
All right, so we have a red diaper dopa baby president appointing one red diaper dopa baby after another, whether as a czar or a czarina. The last Supreme Court nomination was Sotomayor, red diaper dopa baby. Now he wants to top it all off and put the cherry on the cake with Elena Kagan, a woman who glorified socialism in New York City. There is a paper trail. The woman has a very far left paper trail. Don't believe a word coming out of the mouths of the fifth column. She is unqualified because she is an extremist. Everything she has written is extreme. What in the hell is wrong with the American people that they sit here like dunces and he's about to B-slap you again? This man B-slaps America every day of the week and we sit here and we take it. Stop being B. He's treating America like we're... Elena Kagan is not qualified to be a Supreme Court justice. Forget the fact that she's never been a judge. She has a paper trail. She's a far-left radical red diaper dopa baby. End of story. We exposed it on the Savage Nation. We told you what she wrote at Princeton. We told you what she did at Harvard. We told you everything you need to know. How in the world could you have someone going on the Supreme Court who will not be asked, what is your position on gay marriage? Point blank. 18 states have voted. 18 states have said no. What's your position on immigration, illegal immigration, Ms. Kagan? Where do you stand on it? Don't give us a weasel answer. Where do you stand on illegal immigration? Are you in favor of the illegals or in favor of the police and the American people? Number two, where do you stand on abortion, Ms. Kagan? Where'd you get your money from for this position? Was it Planned Parenthood, Ms. Kagan? What the hell is wrong with this country? Is there not one senator left who can ask a real question? Must all of them think that everything is a PR stunt? Well, yes, of course. That's why talk radio lives, and that's why talk radio will soon not live. Because Obama hates talk radio. Obama fears talk radio. Obama attacks talk radio. Did you hear that speech over the weekend? Listen to the talk radio one. Play the clip where he attacks talk radio. Listen to this one.
With so many voices clamoring for attention on blogs and on cable and on talk radio, it can be difficult at times to sift through it all. Let's face it, even some of the craziest claims can quickly gain traction. I've had some experience in that regard.
That's right. Some of your craziest claims have gained traction. I don't have to go into all of them, but this is not so much about Obama being a Leninist socialist. It's about who he is trying to stuff onto the Supreme Court, who you will have for the rest of your life. She's unqualified. She's a radical leftist. End of story. Put a centrist on. Or at least give the American people a hearing. Ask her about abortion. Ask her about immigration. Ask her about gay marriage. Ask her about gays in the military. Ask her about the real issues she's going to have to vote on. Otherwise, we're not living in a republic anymore. We're living in a banana republic or something along the lines of Venezuela. That's what's going on. It's as simple as that. You know, I'm watching a series on TV that I swore I wouldn't watch, and I went against my own promise. I watched The Pacific. I said I wouldn't watch it on HBO because Tom Hanks came out and called America a racist nation, and I detested him for it. But then I started to watch the series, and I see the reenactment of the men who took the islands in the Pacific in the U.S. Marines and Marine Corps in particular, and what they lived through is beyond comprehension. It was beyond a living hell. I don't understand how a human being could come back from that and not be totally crazy. I don't understand it. I see the men sleeping in mud. I see the men having their friends, see their friends' heads blown off next to them. And I say to myself, would our troops in World War II have done this? Would they have sacrificed if they knew that, well, sometime in the future, a Marxist-Leninist would be president, and that he would put one communist after another in a position of high power, one czar, one czarina after another, one radical feminist after another for the Supreme Court or for this position or for that position? Would they have died for this country, I ask myself? You know the answer to that question. Why would anybody pick up a gun to defend the nation that's going to shoot them in the back? That's the answer. And so I ask myself, what has happened to my country? Where have the people gone? Now, I recognize that the Tea Party's had a major victory with Bennett in Utah. They threw him out. The guy thought that he could get away with his rhino activities and run forever and that there was no change. Congratulations to the functioning Tea Party movement in the United States of America. It is becoming what it always has been, which is the voice of the American people. So there's a huge hope that all the fake Republicans will be thrown out, unfortunately. And here's the problem. The reason Obama is trying to force Kagan down our throats now and get her seated by the fall is because he knows they're finished. He knows that come November, they're going to lose between 25 and 100 seats in Congress. He knows that. And then he knows there'll be almost no chance to stock the Supreme Court with another red diaper doper baby. So again, she's unqualified. You can raise your voice. You can flood the Democrats with emails. I am appealing particularly to Democrats, particularly those who saw what he's done to Israel, particularly those of you who understand he is owned by Goldman Sachs, particularly those of you who understand he is not a man of the people, but he's a man certainly who wants to make you into sheeple. This is the Savage Nation, Kagan in context, Obama's judgmental nun-judge picked for the Supreme Court. Hear all about it on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So Kagan is a red diaper doper baby. She's part of the New York City Communist Front. She has been her entire life, in my opinion. Don't be a fool and think that they have to wear red berets and run in the street with red flags. She was born in New York City unto itself in that period of time, going to Hunter College. She was a given leftist. All right, so are millions of other people who grew up. She earned an AB in history from Princeton, right? At Princeton, Kagan wrote a senior thesis on the historian, so-called, and I'll tell you something more about him in a minute, Sean Wilentz, entitled, quote, "To the Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City, 1900 to 1933. Okay. Now, who was Sean Wilentz? Who was her professor? Good friend of the Clintons. Wilentz is a longtime family friend of Bill Clinton. He was the son of a well-known Greenwich Village bookstore owner, the 8th Street Bookshop, as you well know, another communist bookstore. And, of course, for that, he was rewarded with one professorship after another. We know that the universities are rife with commies, particularly red diaper dopa babies from New York City who went out to America and poisoned the well of thought. So this man was her mentor at Princeton. And we're not supposed to know any of this. We're not supposed to note that Kagan wrote The Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City. We're not supposed to know that in 1991, when she is at the faculty of the University of Chicago Law School, and she's a tenured professor because, again, she's part of the old girl network, she publishes a paper on the regulation of hate speech, and you're not supposed to be worried about someone with these extremist views. We're not supposed to know that Lawrence Summers, the man who gave us TARP and the stimulus fund, the man behind the scenes, the man who's connected to Goldman Sachs, Larry Summers was first to appoint Kagan, the female dean of Harvard Law, in 2003. While on campus, she bars military recruiters from campus because it's not fair to gays and lesbians. But if none of that matters to you because you're a social liberal, let me ask you about this one. Between 2005 and 2008, this Kagan, this very same woman who Obama wants to put on the Supreme Court, was a member of the Research Advisory Council of the Goldman Sachs Global Markets Institute. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. This one, this judgmental red diaper dopa baby, is an extremist. She is out of the ken of normalcy. She is not a centrist. She is a radical, and she is dangerous. Now, there's more to the story than this. Much more to the story than this. You got to understand that liberal intellectuals, meaning communist intellectuals, are all very, very dangerous to your freedom. All you got to do is look at what Chavez just did to one of his cohorts in Venezuela. He took a general who fought with him to become powerful. He took this general of his who finally stood up to him and said he's a dictator, and he put him in prison for 8 years. This is how all revolutions operate. This is what Castro did. This is what he is doing, and this is what Obama will do if he's not stopped politically. I'm going to read to you something. I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to ask your friends these questions. What do your friends talk about? What are the problems that interest them? Is he or she an unemployed worker? Is he or she skilled in their profession or craft but without a job? Is he a shopkeeper, a store owner? Maybe business isn't so good. Does he belong to a trade union, or is he a farmer? What are their problems? Is he a young man just out of college? Is he looking for a job and there aren't any? Is he a member of a minority group of any level? Is she a young mother worrying about sending her child into kindergarten? Now, where is this coming from? This is coming from a chapter called The Communist Trojan Horse in Action, in a book that I have from 1958, on how the Communist Party is to use mass agitation to soften up our society through social, religious, economic, racial, and political tactics. Stir them up, set one against the other, divide and conquer. That's the way to soften up a democracy. Now, if you don't understand who Obama is yet, you're going to understand it day in and day out. You're finally going to get it when my book comes out in September. It was sent to the publisher 30 minutes ago. I've worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. It's the best book I've ever written. It's like nothing anyone has published yet. It's out of my hands. It's in the hands of the publishers. I'm not going to give you the title. But I want you to listen to our red diaper dopa baby president as he gave a speech the other day at Hampton University. I want you to listen to the class warfare that Obama uses. And you said Reverend Wright didn't matter. You actually didn't think that what went into his ears those 20 years as he sat listening to the white hater, the America hater, Reverend Wright, none of that resonated with Barack Obama? Listen to clip 24 as he speaks at an all-black college.
That degree is even more important in tough times like these. In fact, the unemployment rate for folks who've never gone to college is over twice as high as for folks with a college degree or more. African-Americans are being outperformed by their white classmates, as are Hispanic-Americans. Students in well-off areas are outperforming students in poorer rural or urban communities, no matter what skin color. So all of us have a responsibility as Americans to change this.
Class warfare. See what he's doing here? He didn't use race now because it would be too obvious at a predominantly black college. He is reverting to himself, which is class warfare. Do you understand this? Do you get it? Now we have a high school teacher from Los Angeles, Ron Gochez, who calls for a Mexican revolution at a La Raza rally at the UCLA. Listen to clips 26. You're not going to believe this is going on in America.
As a militante of Unión del Barrio, a revolutionary Mexican organization here, we understand what the camarada is saying. You're right. This is not just about Mexico. This is about a global struggle against imperialism and capitalism.
Yes.
But we know that all of that is happening in the context that where we now stand is stolen, occupied Mexico. Why is it that these people, these frail, racist white people, want to keep us out of this country? It's not because simply the color of our skin. It's not simply because they just want to exploit us. Let me tell you why. Because on this planet right now, of 6 billion people, at the forefront of the revolutionary movement is the raza.
La raza, the race, brown supremacist movement, well emplaced in the Obama administration. The former head of La Raza, the brown supremacist organization, Cecilia Munoz, is ensconced in the White House. All while you blinked, all while you took yourself out to the ball game, all while you barbecue. Now, I don't blame you for turning away from politics. I understand there's a limit to what you can take. I get it. But right now is the time for you to stand up and be heard. Now is your time to send an email to your congressman or your senator and you say, never again. If you approve of Sotomayor, if you approve of Kagan, we are throwing you out. We'll do to you what we did to Bennett. You got to send it particularly to the Republicans. There's no question all the Democrats are communist Marxists. They're all going to go along with whatever their puppet master demands of them. That's a given. Forget them. Don't even waste your time. I take it back what I said before. Forget Democrats. They're hopeless. They threw their lot in with the socialists a long time ago. The Republicans are the only hope. You've got to pressure them right now. And we know their names, and we know who the wobblies are, and we know that they can be, let us say, made to do the right thing. Coburn, Oklahoma. Collins, Maine. Greg, New Hampshire. Kyle, Arizona. Lugar, Indiana. Snow of Maine. These are the Senate Republicans who voted in 2009 in favor of Elena Kagan's nomination to be Solicitor General. You've got to flood them with emails. Don't vote for Kagan or we vote you out. This is exactly what I did when Bush tried to put in a stooge, Harriet Myers. Remember, it was I who stopped Harriet Myers. I don't need the credit for it. I don't give a damn if it makes it to Wikipedia. You know who stopped the Dubai ports deal. You know who single-handedly reversed Harriet Myers' nomination by Bush. It was the Savage Nation. You are the original Radio Tea Party. You are the original compassionate conservatives. You are the millions of people who have changed America for the better. The problem is you have not been organized. The hope is that you are now organized through all of these Tea Parties. And the prayer is that there will be one leader who emerges from the Tea Parties who will become like the king, the ancient king of Israel, David, who amalgamated all of the tribes into a nation. The Tea Parties have to become the Savage Nation in order for America to be saved from the communist movement that has taken over the United States of America. That's my humble opinion. Now, if you'd rather that I go on, I have another topic that we can talk about today. If this is not good enough for you on Kagan, you know where I stand on it. I've told you what she's written. I've told you who her mentors are. I told you she's unqualified at any speed. And now we will go on to some other questions. We know she's a radical feminist. We don't know where she stands on gay marriage, but I'm pretty sure she won't be asked that question. Let's ask this question. I saw this over the weekend. I put it up on michaelsavage.com in a medical journal. Should we pay drug addicts to be sterilized? It's a question that was raised on a blog site in England. I think it was in the British Medical Journal, and it caught my attention. They're arguing in Britain whether to pay drug addicts to be sterilized. Where do you stand on that? Should we pay drug addicts to be sterilized? Now, the thought is that if you sterilize a drug addict, they will not give birth to a drug-addicted baby because the baby suffers, and no doubt the baby is either ill or will be a drug addict themselves. I mean, it's an innocent, being brought into the world. So should society pay drug addicts to be sterilized? It's an interesting question. I'll see where this goes, if it goes anywhere. 1-800-449-825. Or do you want to talk about the lazy Greeks? Would you like to talk about the laziest society on earth? A place where work is a curse word. A place where leisure is not only the norm, but the ideal. The ideal of a Greek is to get up in the morning and do nothing all day but smoke cigarettes, drink ouzo, and look for a girl. And so consequently, the lazy bums in Greece finally have to pay the piper, and instead, the Germans are going to come bail them out. And as a result of bailing them out, Merkel is in the toilet with regard to popularity. The head of Germany, popularity has fallen because she agreed to write a big check to lazy Greeks who don't want to get off their behinds and go to work. Look at the shocking idea in Greece. They're going to raise the retirement age for women, shock, to the age 65. And they rioted for that. They almost burnt the place down. I'll be right back.
Savage.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must...
So we have a master of deceit in the White House who is now trying to pull another one on us and put a radical red diaper dopa baby into the Supreme Court. And apparently there are no senators out there who are going to ask her the questions that must be asked. Abortion, where does she stand on immigration? Where does she stand on gay rights? Where does she stand on gay marriage? Are they going to ask these questions? You know they're not. You know that they're worthless. And so you have to pull a Bennett on these Republicans. You have to throw them out of power. Now let's look at Ms. Kagan's background. As I said, Ms. Kagan was born into a red diaper dopa baby family in New York. Her father, Robert Kagan, died in 1994 at age 67. At the time, he was a lawyer. He was a lawyer for tenants who were fighting land building owners. Robert Kagan, Elena Kagan's father, was a lawyer, a left-wing lawyer, who had lived on the radical Upper West Side for the last 30 years. In fact, I think the Upper West Side of Manhattan does not permit anyone to reside there unless they're an illegal alien or a member of the Communist Party USA. At his death, Mr. Kagan, her father, was a longtime partner in the Manhattan law firm of Kagan and Lubick. So, what did they specialize in? Kagan and Lubick worked with tenant associations involved in negotiations with landlords about converting rented apartments to co-ops. In other words, he did not want any of New York's rentals turned into co-ops. Many of you communists would agree with that, because you like something for nothing. You like the Greeks. From 1971 to 1975, Kagan's father was also chairman of COMBO, a committee representing West Side community boards, which opposed the West Side Highway Project, the Westway Highway Project. In other words, he was a classic leftist who was against everything that was really progressive and called himself a progressive. He was also the president of the United Parents Association, a citywide parents advocacy group. Mr. Kagan was born in Brooklyn, grew up in its Flatbush section, right away suspect, and received a BA from Penn State in 1948. Now, I don't have to tell you what Penn State was in 1948. He got his LLB from Yale in 51 and a master's degree in law from NYU. These are already pretty clear. So I'm giving you a little bit of background that you're not going to hear from anybody in the Senate, on the Senate side. If you have any comments on this, you can call me, or on the Greek thing, whatever you want to talk about. Or if you'd like me to play the La Raza Call for Revolution again, I'd be glad to do it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. In fact, what I'm going to do is go to my website. Since we're coming to the end of this hour with about 4 minutes to go, I want to look at some other stories. Obama's judgmental nun judge, better known as Shorty. I have nothing against people who are under 5 feet two, but her Thurgood Marshall referred to her affectionately as Shorty, according to Obama. Play the Obama clip where he says Shorty. So I don't think I'm making this up. I don't.
She's
care
often
about
referred
Shorty.
To Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, for whom she clerked, as her hero. I understand that he reciprocated by calling her Shorty.
Let's stop here. Thurgood Marshall was an outright communist. Thurgood Marshall almost destroyed America. The Marshall Supreme Court almost destroyed America. The Marshall Supreme Court was deeply tied into the entire 60s. Let's do it in the road. If it feels good, do it. Overthrow America. Bring down the patriarchy. Up the system. Do you understand that there's no end to this? That this woman is an exemplar of that entire area? Is she the next Harriet Myers, where Bush tried to put Harriet Myers in the nation's higher court, this nonentity? She's a radical leftist, no judicial experience. Also on my website, I'm going to take it down in the next few days. If you noticed it, it says In Memoriam, Jerome, May 8th, 1944 to October 1969, from Brother Michael, and that was for my brother, my silent brother, Jerome, who was born on May 8th, 1944, and he lived to 1969, and Saturday was his birthday. And I recognized it, and I will for the rest of eternity. That's all there is to that one. And I have to live for two people. I've told you that. I told you that inside me beats two hearts, mine and his. So if you say, where do you get your energy from? How do you do it? I don't understand where you get your energy from. I'm one brother. He died. He never had a chance. He didn't say a word in his whole life. So I speak for two of us. I have the energy for two. You know, there's an article on my website on the bottom about a guru on the left, Starving Yogi Astounds Indian Scientists. An 83-year-old Indian holy man who says he has spent 70 years without food or water has astounded a team of military doctors who studied him for 2 weeks. They put him in a locked hospital room. They did not give him food or water for 2 weeks, observation period. And they could not believe it. During the period of 2 weeks, he neither ate nor drank and did not go to the toilet. Neurologist Sudhir Shah said, "We still do not know how he survives. It is still a mystery what kind of phenomenon this is." The long-haired and bearded yogi was sealed in a hospital in the city of Ahmedabad, blah, blah, blah. The government of India hopes that the findings set to be released in greater detail in several months could help soldiers survive without food and drink, assist astronauts, or even save the lives of people trapped in natural disasters. So how does he do it? They don't understand it. And they say if this yogi does not derive energy from food and water, he must be doing that from energy sources around him, sunlight being one, said Shah. As medical practitioners, we cannot shut our eyes to possibilities to a source of energy other than calories. So I got to thinking about this. I said to myself, where do I get my energy from? Where do I draw it from? I don't get it from the sun. I'm not a sun worshiper. I stay out of the sun. Where do I get my energy from? I said, well, genetic encoded in me is God, is a worship of God. I'm encoded to appeal to God for my strength. Now, I must admit that I've turned away from God for well over a number of months right now, maybe longer than a number of months. The radical Muslims have poisoned me on religion altogether. The radical Muslims have turned me away from God altogether. And for a long while now, I'll be frank with you, I just kept saying a pox unto all of them. Then you had the Catholic molestation story where little boys were being molested by the priests. And I said, I can't take it anymore. The whole religious thing really gets to me. But I sat before the show and I tapped into God again. And I said, dear God, I pray for the strength to be strong for America and the wisdom to speak it. Has he answered my prayers?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In the last year, as I have served as Solicitor General, my long-standing appreciation for the Supreme Court's role in our constitutional democracy has become ever deeper and richer.
Appreciation for diverse views may also come in handy as a diehard Mets fan serving alongside her new colleague, Yankees fan Justice Sotomayor, who I believe has ordered a pinstripe robe for the occasion.
So when the Republicans leave the hearings on Kagan, you will see the white snail trails as they leave the hearing room, as they leave behind the best marking of their lack of character. You know, he's going to pull another one on us. He got away with it the first time with himself, pretending to be a centrist when we know we got a Marxist-Leninist in the White House. Most American people are not sophisticated enough to understand that, but they know that he's not good for the country. Every poll shows that basically it's the Democrats are out come November. Short of a war, which of course I wouldn't rule out, which will rally them around Obama and the Dems, short of a war, there's no question the Dems will lose 25 to 100 seats in November, and Obama will be thrown out. He'll be a one-term president, short of some tricks that he and Rahm Emanuel come up with. And don't put anything behind this gang that can shoot very straight indeed. But let's go back to this. So he pulls it on us the first time, pretending to be a centrist when he's anything but. Now he's trying to sell this red diaper doper baby, Elena Kagan, as a balanced, fair centrist when she's a lifetime red diaper doper baby. Her father was a radical lawyer. She comes from a radical law background. All of her friends at university were radical leftists. How many times can this guy get away with the same thing, I wonder? Now, I want to go to a story I ended the last hour with, in addition to talking about Kagan the train wreck and the truth about Kagan and her real paper trail, as opposed to the lie being put out by the vermin in the media who say there's no paper trail. There's a very clear paper trail, although she's never been a judge, which unto itself should tell you something. She has certainly written papers and given speeches, and they're very telling. She is a red diaper dopa baby, very clearly. Starving yogi astounds Indian scientists. I ended the last hour with that. 83-year-old Indian holy man who says he has spent 70 years without food or water. Now, he not had food or water for 70 years. Was studied for 2 weeks in a hospital in India by a team of military doctors. And he was under constant surveillance from a team of 30 docs equipped with cameras and closed-circuit TV. During this two-week period, he neither ate nor drank and did not go to the bathroom. A neurologist said, we still do not know how he survives. It's still a mystery what kind of phenomenon this is. Okay. This man, Johnny, says that he is able to do this because he was blessed by a woman. I want to find the exact word. I don't want to get it wrong. He says he was blessed when he was very young to give him this power. But the question is, can you do it? If you're a soldier, wouldn't you like to be able to survive without food or drink? What if you are a fighter? I mean, what if you are an ordinary person? Can you imagine? No food or drink? It's almost unheard of, if this is true. So they're studying him. He says he got it from some supernatural source, meaning a goddess that blessed him when he was very young. A goddess, you know, whether you want to believe in that. And here it is. Johnny has since returned to his village in northern Gujarat, where he will resume his routine of yoga and meditation. He says that he was blessed by a goddess at a young age, which gave him special powers. So now at the end of the article, we read, if he does not derive energy from food and water, he must be doing that from energy sources around him, sunlight being one, said a doctor. As medical practitioners, we cannot shut our eyes to possibilities to a source of energy other than calories. Keyword energy. Energy other than calories. So I started to contemplate, maybe I should try to tap into some of these powers myself as I read this. We all have somewhere in us contact with the supernatural, or else we wouldn't be on this planet. Every one of us listening to this show has a sixth sense that keeps them alive. You know that. You can know it in your own life. Everyone listening to the show has some kind of ESP that is long repressed. Some of you think that it makes you psychotic, so you go to a crackpot doctor who puts you on medication. But some of these voices that are talking to you are actually talking to you for a reason. It's because you've repressed certain ideas that are bothering you. But I don't want to go into psychoanalysis. Some of you are really sick. I understand that, and we can't just broadly say everyone who hears voices is really healthy. But some of you who are hearing voices are healthy. You just don't understand that those voices are really coming from another power, and perhaps from another dimension trying to guide you in some way. So everyone listening to the show has the ability to tap into some other powers. You can see this in the very, very successful. They all have supernatural powers, whether it's in money. Some people have a way with money that is almost supernatural. How do they know how to make every move right? How do they do it? True, some manipulate the stock market. They're known members of the Managed Funds Association. They're the people who own the hedge funds that put Obama in power. That's not supernatural. That's pure evil. We understand that. And, of course, they own the government, which is why they're telling you that the stock crash last week was a blip, and it happened by accident. I don't believe a word of it. All you got to do is ask yourself, which of the hedge funds made money that day, and you'll have your answer. But you haven't heard that yet. So the same schmucks in the media who are telling you that it was a human error on Wall Street, the same schmucks are not even saying, I don't believe a word of it. I believe that the hedge fund should be investigated, and anyone who reported large profits that day in that last hour should be investigated. If it turns out that they manipulated the market, their assets seized, and they should be put in jail for 50 years. You haven't heard that, have you? Instead, you hear the same rubbish from NBC, from CNBC and MSNBC. But I'm getting off the track now. I want to go back to the yogi, who apparently doesn't eat or drink, and he's living, and he's drawing his energy from another source. So I thought about it, and I said, I do this show every day. I do it with gusto. I do it with vigor. I hope I do it with reason and intelligence. I certainly do it with passion. And I say, where do I get my energy from? And I said, well, in my DNA, in my encoding, it's not about the sun. It's not about nature, although I love nature and the sun. I don't really get that much in terms of I feel great from it. I love going out on my boat. I love seeing the water. At the end of the day, I think it's all because of God for me. And as I said to you at the conclusion of last hour, I turned away from God over the last year or so. I became cynical. I really basically cast myself out of heaven in a way, out of the Garden of Eden, where God prevails. And I was walking around in a sort of hell, a hellish cloud, because I turned from God. It's very difficult if you're a believer in God to turn from God and feel good. So I opened the show by doing a prayer I'm going to do every day this week. Dear God, I pray for the strength to be strong for America and the wisdom to speak it. So I asked you at the end of the last hour, did God answer my prayers? Now, of course, many of you called to say yes, that's a given. But now I want to go on to the issue at hand. The issue at hand is Kagan. How can Obama get away with it again? He faked you before. He ran as a centrist, but he is anything but. He appointed one czar and one czarina after another, one Stalinist after another, one Maoist after another, and he got away with it because there's no opposition party and there is no press. It's a fifth column. Now he's going to get away with it again with Kagan, and you're going to be stuck with her for life? There is no question that Obama will be a one-term president unless he and Rahm Emanuel come up with a war to rally America behind him. And I wouldn't put it past them. They wouldn't be the first, nor will they be the last politicians to go to war and sacrifice the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not more, in order to stay in power. I mean, this is part and parcel of it, of some power-mad people. They're not the first, nor will they be the last. So anything might happen. But Kagan is going to be with you for life unless you send emails to the rhinos who are going to try to make believe that she is a centrist. Kagan is not a centrist. Kagan is a radical. She is a red diaper doper baby. When I come back, I will answer a question from a caller who is asking, what is an RDDB? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time.
Can you imagine the country you are living in if you were in 1943, 44, 45, and you were a U.S. Marine fighting somewhere in the Pacific, and your friend's brains were being blown out next to you, and you were living in mud, and you were drinking dirt, and you had to live around the most hellish conditions you could ever imagine, would you have picked up that gun every day and gone and fought for a country that would have a Marxist-Leninist as president and a radical leftist on the Supreme Court, one after the other? You've had a revolution in the United States of America. The woman is not only a radical leftist, she has no experience whatsoever. That's the truth. That's the reality. That's the situation. Unfortunately, we have a one-party system with a rubber-stamp Republican Party, and we have no press to speak of. We have a fourth estate that has become the fifth column. I'm Michael Savage, and I'm a proud member of the fourth estate, one of the few who still exist. Abilene, Texas. Bill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you know, you asked that question about if you knew now what you knew then, would you still do it? Let me tell you, I retired out of the military after 25 years, jumping out of perfectly good airplanes, got crippled up pretty good on account of it, and you know what? Yeah, still would. Maybe it's foolish optimism. I don't know, but someone's got to do it. I didn't see anybody else in my graduating class volunteer, so yeah, we would. We still will.
I understand. I hear you, but I'm asking it from a different point of view, by the way. New York City, WOR. Jim, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Jim, I'm only 30. Michael, I'm only 30 years old, and you keep saying red diaper doper baby. I was going to Google it, but I'd rather hear it straight from you. What does it mean?
All right, I first published that in the Savage Nation back in 01 or 02. When I grew up, there was a phrase, red diaper baby, about kids like Kagan who grew up in communist or socialist households in New York City. There's no question in my mind she qualifies as a red diaper baby, given her father's background as a lawyer against owners of buildings. So she grew up in the milieu of the Reds. These kids only circulated with other Reds. They were sent to camps in the Poconos that catered to communists and communist children. It was a well-known phenomenon, red diaper baby, okay? But I asked myself how so many people, starting with Bill Clinton, became not only red diaper babies, how did they become so radically anti-American rather than just un-American? In other words, there's such a thing as un-American, then there's such a thing as anti-American, right?
Yep.
And the answer was the marijuana, the dope. When you take a red diaper baby and you put that red diaper baby on 20 years of marijuana, what you have is a toxic reaction inside the brain, and it produces flawed thinking, flawed realities. Some of them are quite brilliant up to a point, but they don't even understand where they're coming from. They just keep repeating like monomaniacs all of the rhetoric of the anti-Americanism that they grew up with, and then they enact it. And then they don't even understand what they're doing to their own country. And now, open your eyes. Here we are, 2010. We have a Times Square bomber. The bomb doesn't go off. And we have people in the media like Wolf Blitzer who start asking about the man's economic status. Was it because his apartment was not furnished well? Was it because he didn't have a job? Do you understand what I'm getting at, red diaper dopa baby?
I get it. So is Obama one?
Well, I'll let you figure it out. What would you call him?
I'd call him one. How about you?
Well, he himself said that he inhaled. Thanks for the call. But many of us smoked marijuana. Marijuana is not the issue. Many of us did a lot of things when we were 20 years old or 30 years old, but we grew up. Most of these people never grew up. They're still pushing the illogic, the anti-Americanism, the suicidalism of the 1960s. Don't you get it? If it was just limited to the arts, we'd pay no attention to it. We'd say they're merely marionettes. But they're running things now. And now they want to put someone whose philosophy is identical to that of any red diaper dopa baby that you have ever met. She is another one, another master of deceit, in my opinion. Kagan has used deceit her entire life to become the dean of Harvard Law School, a professor of this, solicitor general. She has buried all of her actual sentiments because she has been handpicked. Way back when Obama was handpicked, she was handpicked in Chicago by the very same puppet masters that put him in power, picked her for the Supreme Court. Red diaper dopa baby. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. We can go on to other topics such as the lazy Greeks. And what does the bailout mean for you? You think you're not going to bail it out? You are wrong. You're going to bail the Greeks out. A good portion of that bailout money comes from the United States of America. A good portion of the bailout comes from the very same gangster banks that were bailed out by the U.S. government, meaning with tax dollars. Or if you'd like me to go back to my theory on what happened in the stock market last week, I don't understand how this has already been swept under the rug. Oh, yes, I do understand it. Yes, I do understand it. The government media complex that is now telling you that Elena Kagan is a centrist, that Elena Kagan has no paper trail, has already put out the big lie that it was a glitch in the electronic trading system that caused the crash last week. I say not so fast. And I ask this question. Which hedge funds made billions of dollars last week in that 30-minute window? Are you aware of the fact that there are limits on trading up until the last half hour in the stock market? And that prior to 3 o'clock, at 2 o'clock of any day, if the market drops more than 10 points, there's an automatic check sets in and the trading is halted. After 2:30, there's no such rule. Do you know when this happened to the stock market, the trillion-dollar loss, so to speak? It happened at 2:30 exactly. $1 trillion was traded at 2:30 exactly, and suddenly the market rebounded thereafter, somewhere before 3 o'clock. It's common sense to me that if we had a legitimate government, they would be investigating which hedge funds made tens or hundreds of billions of dollars that day in that half an hour. Until I have the answer to that, I believe we're getting lies all over again from the very same administration that was put in power by the very same forces in Wall Street.
Savage.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all be seated. This is the Savage Court now in session. Miss Kagan, thanks for coming before the people of the Savage Nation. We have a few questions for you. We realize that President Obama would like to put you on the Supreme Court, and we'd like to ask you your positions on several very important issues to the American people. Right now, there's a big debate going on about illegal immigrants who are overrunning America. Ms. Kagan, where do you stand on the state law in Arizona which permits police to ask a person's status as to immigration if they are arrested or stopped on another charge, Ms. Kagan? Where do you stand on illegal immigration with regard to the Arizona law? We're having a hypothetical here because this will never happen, given that the government media complex has already approved the red diaper dopa baby by and large, and the Republicans are certainly not going to represent you. Then we'd say, Ms. Kagan, 17 or 18 states have had ballot initiatives on gay marriage, and in all of these states, when the people have been allowed to vote on it, they've all rejected gay marriage for various reasons. If you were a Supreme Court justice, where would you stand on gay marriage, Ms. Kagan? Ms. Kagan, we'd like to know where you stand on late-term abortion, which some consider to be infanticide. Are you in favor of permitting a baby in the ninth month of pregnancy to be cut out of the womb and the baby body parts sold for research purposes, Ms. Kagan? Are you a believer in that, or are you opposed to that for any reason, Ms. Kagan? Ms. Kagan, we note that you once, in your financial disclosures, served on the Goldman Sachs Research Advisory Council from 05 to 08 while you were dean of Harvard Law School, and you received $10,000 from Goldman Sachs for your service in 2008. If any questions of finance to do with Goldman Sachs or Wall Street, for that matter, came before you, would you recuse yourself, Ms. Kagan? No, we appreciate your candor thus far, Ms. Kagan, and your silence is certainly deafening. Ms. Kagan, we have a final question for you today that is of the utmost importance, and that would be the issue of military recruiting on campus. We realize that you took a very strong stand against military recruitment at Harvard Law School because of the Armed Forces Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The question is, do you put your agenda ahead of the national security interests of the United States of America, or would you repress your agenda for the sake of the national security of the United States of America and support the military's recruitment policies on campuses around America, Ms. Kagan? See, these are the questions that I'm asking now that you're never going to hear asked. Instead, it's going to be another whitewash of Solicitor General Alina Kagan, who has already been approved by the government media complex. You do not live in a democracy. You live in something other than a democracy. Chicago, Dan, welcome. You're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm just talking about the alleged trading error from last week.
Yes, right.
You know, I work in the industry, and I do electronic trading myself. And I got to tell you, any bank or hedge fund that's doing electronic trading has very sophisticated software with controls that will never allow them to sell 16 billion shares in one fell swoop. It just, they wouldn't let it happen. It's way
too much. So here's the question I raise. Tell me if I understand this correctly, because I'm an amateur at this. I understand that prior to 2:30, if a market drops more than 10%, automatic curbs are set in place. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called the circuit breaker.
All right. But at 2:30, the circuit breaker is turned off. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Is there any way to investigate if any of the major hedge funds that are members of the Managed Funds Association made tens of billions of dollars between 2:30 and 3 o'clock on that notorious day?
There's a way to do it, because every trade that's made on an exchange is recorded and it goes back to somebody. It would involve combing through a lot of data, but I mean, you could eventually match up all the buys and sells and the prices, and you'd be able to figure it out.
All right, but that could be done if we had a legitimate SEC, correct? Would they be the right organization to do it?
Yeah, sure.
The SEC's job is to be the watchdog of Wall Street. Thus far, the SEC has not been heard from with regard to this stupendous trillion-dollar drop and rise all in a 30-minute period. I haven't heard one word from them, have you?
Nope.
All right. So what is your suspicion? What happened?
I mean, the way it seems is that, yeah, somebody intentionally, you know, instigated a chain reaction of a lot of sell in the market, whether where they originated, they originated on one of the stock futures indexes or whatever, they knew that if they would sell enough shares, they would trigger automatic systems at other banks and other hedge funds to get out of their positions as well and drop the market significantly.
Right, and then they moved back in and they bought Procter & Gamble for 10 cents, right?
Yeah.
And then they and then they sold it at $30.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, they would have initially sold everything and then bought it at the bottom. And then
that's what I'm saying. Right. But wait a minute, bought it at the bottom. Did they resell it?
They sold it. The actual chain reaction of selling that brought the price.
All right, so is my theory plausible that some members of the Managed Funds Association made tens or hundreds of billions of dollars during that 30-minute window?
It's extremely risky, but it's definitely possible.
Then why are we not hearing about this from anybody except Michael Savage? I thought that I don't know what I'm talking about. I thought the media says I don't exist. I thought the media says that I'm not fair and I'm not balanced. I thought the government says I don't exist. Why am I the only one who's figured this out?
I think you know why.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's all in my new book coming out in September. Sent to the publisher about 2 hours ago. It's gone. It's out of my hands. It's going to be one of the biggest books of 2010. I can guarantee you. You're not going to believe what's coming. You're not going to believe it. Look, I do what I have to do. I'm just one man with one set of logic, logical principles, and I apply it to every question. So I think I've covered a lot of ground today. I've given you Kagan in context, and I don't really want to do it again because you're going to hear it over and over again. Obama is a master of deceit. Kagan has been a master of deceit. She thinks that she's getting away with hiding her red diaper dopa baby orientation. Not this guy, not me. I'm the guy in the undershirt on the second floor looking down as the world goes by. I see all. That's right. Old Guru Mike sees everything going by down in the street below, and this is how I see it. I'm calling it like I see it. Kagan in context. Now, let's say you don't see it my way. So I'll put it in another way so maybe you can see it. Let us say that we had a right-wing candidate who ran as a centrist for the presidency, made believe he was a centrist, hid all of his right-wing background. They found him sitting in a Ku Klux Klan meeting for 20 years with a white sheet on, and then he said, I wasn't sitting there, I wasn't in the white sheet. The minute I found out that I was wearing a white sheet, I removed the white sheet, and I was really sleeping on it, I rolled around in it. I actually wasn't sleeping in the white sheet. Well, what about the two eye holes that were found in the white sheet that weren't my eyes, they were for someone else? Somebody put them in there, it was somebody put... And then he becomes president. And then after 18 months, this right-wing radical president, his ratings are in the toilet because people find out that he's really an extreme right-winger. So now he knows that the number is up, and he knows he's only a few months away from the midterm elections where his entire party is about to be thrown out of power because people don't like extremists in American politics, whether they be far left or far right. And so what he does is he tries to usher in a radical far-right lawyer for one of the far-right fringe groups onto the Supreme Court. Are you going to tell me that that lawyer who would be put up for the Supreme Court would not have any questions about anything? You're telling me they wouldn't ask anything of the man, even if he had written a paper while at the University of Right-Wingism in praise of the fascist movements in the United States of America? You're telling me that wouldn't indicate a trigger of alarm? What would happen if that was the case? Are the American people this naive or this tuned out that they can't see that Kagan is a radical leftist and so out of touch with the mainstream of America? Well, I think that they may know it. They will know it over the next few days. But there is a massive campaign to cover up her background on every issue. And that is because we live in a one-party system with a fifth column instead of a fourth estate. She is a radical feminist. She is not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. I have made my point, and now we're not going to talk about it for the rest of today. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We've got another caller on the profit that was made last week. Charlie in New York, thank you for calling. Charlie, what are you saying about last week's flip in the market?
Well, there's no. I don't know how it happened, but you have to realize I'm a trader myself, but I'm a small trader, and whoever the party was that initially caused the initial reaction, there are a lot of people that profit by following the footsteps of that initial trader. They just follow the footprints of the money. And if you're a good trader, you can see what's happening and just
full of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, I understand. In other words, so many people profited, but not to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, right?
Sure. There were thousands of people who profited, but
yeah, but these were small fish compared to the big whales. But is it that hard to figure out that if at 2:30 didn't this all occur after 2:30? Am I correct in that?
It started, I believe, just before 2:30.
All right, but right around when the circuit breaker goes off, so to speak. So they drive the stock into the toilet. And then they buy it back. Isn't that what they did at a low price?
Exactly.
All right.
That's correct.
Isn't it easy to check out how much profit was made by which managed funds association members?
Like the previous gentleman said, it's not easy, but it definitely can be done. The SEC...
Well, it's not easy, but the government could do it. Isn't that what a government's for, to govern?
Sure. They can absolutely...
They certainly govern every aspect of the little guy's life. Can't they govern the aspect of the trillionaire's life?
Absolutely.
Now, who belongs to the Managed Funds Association? Why, it's the Soros Fund. It's the Paulson Fund. Who else?
I'm sorry?
Who belongs to this Managed Funds Association, MFA? The Soros Hedge Fund, Paulson's Hedge Fund. Who else?
I'm not quite sure.
You see, that's the shadow government. People want to know who put Obama in power. They don't have to look any further than the Managed Funds Association. He is simply a puppet of the MFA, in my opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I just don't understand the country I'm living in. Here's a woman who clerked for one radical leftist after another, Judge Abner Mikva. Radical leftist, clerks for Justice Thurgood Marshall of the U.S. Supreme Court. The Marshall Court almost destroyed the United States of America, and they're being held up as role models now. Obama, Justice Marshall, that unto itself should make you shudder to think that anybody from that radical background could be appointed to the Supreme Court. But she's been pushed up the ladder. They say she's climbed the ladder through Clinton and this and that. She's been handpicked. This is payback to a certain... let us say, pressure group in the United States of America. But again, everyone's blind. They see no evil, they hear no evil, they speak no evil, except about the Tea Parties, who are the actual American people. New York, WOR, Anna, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. This is Anna, and I just have to say I'm a Greek-American, and yep. I spent my summers in Greece since I was the age of 5. And it is. It's just I don't understand the whole culture, but it's very lazy. But the Greek Americans here work really hard. They work very hard.
Well, yes, any Greek who wants to work leaves Greece and comes to America.
Exactly. But the Greeks, even after 9/11, I had cousins tell me from Greece that we deserved it because they've always lived in fear because of the Muslims, that we deserve to live in fear now, the Americans. And I found that.
Well, the Greeks, remember, the Greeks were once conquered by the Ottoman Turks, and they suffered horribly under the Muslims, right?
They forget.
How can they not understand what the Muslim invasion did to Greece? How can they have sympathy for their oppressor?
It's shocking. And you know what? I was in Greece last summer with my daughter. She just turned 16. She wanted to go to Greece, so I brought her to Greece. And my friends who are Greek-Americans that moved back to Greece because they couldn't cut it here, they... or have all the sympathy for the Muslims. And I said, are you kidding me?
Well, all right. So they're the Stockholm Syndrome and cowardice. It's sad to hear that Greece disappeared. There's no longer the Athenian right now. It's something else, isn't it? The age of the Athenian warrior is over. So inherent in the Greek lifestyle is a great degree of leisure. Is that correct? Leisure is the goal?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, Mike, I mean, I spent summers in there. The last time I was there... because I have 6 children, I have an autistic child, I'm really busy with my kids. But the last time I was there before last summer was in 89, and
yeah.
I was there for a month. I wanted to come home so badly, I couldn't take it anymore.
Why? What do they do all day? They get up and they eat feta cheese and olives and some vegetables. What do they do until they have their first ouzo?
Nothing. It gets so old in a day. You can't. I just couldn't take it anymore. I wanted to be.
Well, are you talking about an island, or are you talking about Athens?
I'm talking about Athens, and then I went to Patras. It's all the same. And then I went to.
You're
Rome.
Saying even in Athens, they're kind of into leisure and laid back, and they do nothing all day long but sit around and shoot the wind.
Nothing. We were so, even my Greek Americans, the same story all the time. We're so sick of
it. So what are they rioting over? They want to raise the retirement age to 65 and cut back on social services, and they went nuts? Don't they understand that the money has to come from somewhere?
They don't. That's what's sick. They do not understand that.
All right, so in other words, they're like American college liberals.
Exactly.
All right, exactly. I rest my case. God bless you and your six children. New York City, WOR. Kate, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. You're up.
Hi, Michael. I'd just like to say that I've lived on the Upper West Side for many years. And I can tell you that if you follow the politics of Elena Kagan and her father, if those politics had prevailed, this city would have been a crime-ridden slum. It was on its way to being destroyed. And just the two people who she worked for, Elizabeth Holtzman and Ted Weiss, these people are lax on crime. They coddle criminals. They brought the methadone clinics into the city, which went a great way towards destroying.
But her father was a lawyer for tenants who did not want to pay fair market value for apartments. Is that correct?
Right, yes. And it was
her father was a radical leftist lawyer, so she grew up in the milieu of the, let us say, workers unite against the world type of mentality. Isn't that more or less who she is?
Yes, and had the city not gone into condos and those conversions, the city, people, the owners were walking away from the buildings.
I remember New York. I know what it was in those days. It would be a slum town if it was not for the condo conversions, where people bought them and spruced up the buildings and saved neighborhoods. And, of course, so-called gentrified all of New York, which, of course, the losers hate. The losers love slums because they can afford a slum, and then they claim that the social services aren't good enough.
That's right.
Well, anyway, look, she comes from a radical left-wing background. She makes Gordon Brown look like Winston Churchill. Let's put it to you that way.
Definitely.
All right. No one even knows who Gordon Brown is already. He's left the stage. The Prince of Darkness has left Mayfair. Gordon Brown resigns. Gordon Brown resigns, and Cameron is now having to do a deal in England with the Lib Dem. It's not good for me, by the way, because there's no clear conservative win. I doubt very much that the conservatives are going to do anything with regard to Michael Savage. Darn, there goes my trip to England this summer for the dental care I was looking forward to. Damn, there goes the trip to England for the cuisine. Ah, darn it. I was so looking forward to the fabulous British cuisine and the medical care that they're famous for. How am I going to do that? Let's listen to British Brown audio clip of him saying good night and good luck.
I have no desire to stay in my position longer than is needed to ensure the path to economic growth is assured. And the process of political reform we have agreed.
Get the bum off. Take a walk. You're the Prince of Darkness. Go take a job somewhere in Yugoslavia. Take a job for one of the Yugoslavian nations. Maybe you can manage the Yugo plant now and do for Yugo what you did for England. Are you kidding me? Where do they get these people from with those British accents? One of the shows I love watching on TV is The Tudors. Phenomenal. I never saw anything as well done. Unbelievable. I think it's on HBO or Showtime. I don't even know. The latest one is great, where Henry finds out his young wife has been stooping everybody in the palace behind his back, in the doorways, in the lavatory. And the girl is played by this superbly, you know, beautiful girl. But wow, does he do the end when she gets caught. She's quite an actress before they chop her head off. It's awesome. However, I can't believe how well they do it. They're like Hell's Angels in nice clothing.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up.
While we can't presume to replace Justice Stevens' wisdom or experience, I have selected a nominee who I believe embodies that same excellence, independence, integrity, and passion for the law, and who can ultimately provide that same kind of leadership on the court. Our Solicitor General and my friend, Elena Kagan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am honored and I am humbled by this nomination and by the confidence you have shown in me.
Okay, here we have President Obama trying to shoehorn somebody onto the Supreme Court without any prior judicial experience. That's number one. Now, that would be bad enough that she's never been a judge. She's a radical, left-wing professor out of all places, Harvard University. That's number two. Number three, do you trust somebody to be on the Supreme Court whose senior thesis in college was a friendly examination of revolutionary socialism in New York City? And the vermin in the media say there's no paper trail? Oh, we found a paper trail. Moreover, what do Obama's Supreme Court nominations so far say about his relationship with radical feminists? First, there was Sotomayor, and now there is this unmarried radical feminist, Ms. Kagan. Where does she stand, by the way, on gay marriage? Will any of the spineless senators ask this during so-called confirmation hearings? I kind of doubt it. You know that they're whitewashing this woman. You know that she's a radical. You know that she's connected to Obama. You know that she's absolutely out of the ken of normalcy in terms of politics. You also know she was born in New York City, which, of course, unto itself is suspect, and earned a degree in history, summa cum laude, very nice. But at Princeton, the paper trail tells us, she wrote a senior thesis entitled To the Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City. Really? While in Chicago, as an assistant professor, she published Regulation of Hate Speech and Pornography. Did you hear that? In other words, she's against the First Amendment, unless it agrees with her. Who was the first man to appoint her as dean of Harvard Law School? None other than Obama's Lawrence Summers. That's right, the same Larry Summers who has given us the bailouts, the stimulus plan, Obamacare, the taking over of GM. The same Lawrence Summers appointed this radical left-wing Kagan to the deanship of Harvard Law School. During her deanship, Ms. Kagan supported a longstanding policy barring military recruiters from campus. Why? Because she felt that the military's don't ask, don't tell policy discriminated against gays and lesbians. It had nothing to do with national security, nothing to do with what the military wanted, only what she and her friends at Harvard wanted. But here comes the best part. You say there's no paper trail? Well, old Savage found it. From 2005 through 2008, Ms. Kagan was a member of the Research Advisory Council of the Goldman Sachs Global Markets Institute. She has never argued a case at trial. She has never argued before the Supreme Court, ladies and gentlemen of the United States of America. How in the world can you even consider this human being to be worthy of the Supreme Court because you're going to live with her forever? Never served as a judge. Critic of the military's don't ask, don't tell. She wants gays to serve openly in the military. And so this is what we face today under this radical communist professor of ours as president. What would you expect? Something different? As I said, I'm calling her Obama's judgmental nun-judge, who he picked for the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan. A real prize. She tried to kick the military off the Harvard campus when she was dean of the law school because of don't ask, don't tell. Just to give you an idea of her orientation on that issue, and on other issues, you must know she took money from Goldman Sachs, just like her boss Obama. Of course, now the empty skirts in the media are saying that she doesn't have much of a paper trail. Well, that's false, because her senior thesis at Princeton was entitled To the Final Conflict, Socialism and New York City. She's a New York City radical Marxist lawyer through and through. Now, in spite of a Marxist background, we know that Obama is replacing a liberal with another liberal. So this will not immediately change the ideological content of the Supreme Court. But what is even more worrying is Kagan's militancy and her complete lack of judicial experience. She has never been a judge. Now, if you think that I'm being overly partisan, maybe you're right. But remember, I called Harriet Myers, George Bush's hand-picked stooge, a judicial nonentity in 2005. I opposed Harriet Myers in 2005 because she was a judicial nonentity. At that time, I outraged conservatives, but the fact of the matter is they then came around to understand I was right. And they made their anger known to Bush, and Myers' nomination was withdrawn. Kagan should suffer the same fate. Of course, if it's up to the weak-kneed Republicans in the Senate, she'll probably be ushered right in. Lugar, Kyle, and Coburn, supposedly all solid conservatives. Yeah, right. They all voted in favor of her, of this radical feminist to be Solicitor General, as did the rhinos Gregg and Collins and Snow. So don't count on the supine Republican Party to save you from Ms. Kagan or even fight against her. Obama seems to be saying that because of the fact that she's a judicial nonentity, that makes her a well-rounded nominee. But remember, he already had Christina Roma, Sonia Sotomayor, and Janet Napolitano. Obama's organization is well-rounded indeed. What do I have to tell you? What do I have to tell you? It's the sad state of affairs that we're living in a country. I don't know whose country it is. I know it's not mine. I know that I am not living in the America I grew up in, that I used to wake up in the morning and feel like the luckiest person on earth. My parents told me how the world was around me and how everybody wanted to come here. I used to wake up in the morning and feel lucky just to be an American when I knew how bad it was everywhere else on earth. And then I wake up one day and I start to feel, wait a minute, how did this country become almost like a third world nation? How did patriots in this country become suspect? How did deviants and other such individuals suddenly become revered? How is it that every movie that is made is not about a hero, but about a degenerate criminal? How is it possible that there are so many sick people in so many positions of power? How is it that every crime that is committed, the suspect is immediately a white male? How far have we fallen so fast in the United States of America? I ask myself every morning as I awaken and every night as I go to sleep. That's the truth. That's one man's opinion. If you don't agree with me, you know what? It's too damn bad. I'm an Aries, and I'll tell you the way I see it. If it matches, fine. If it's a blood donation that matches, take it as a transfusion. If it's a blood donation that causes toxicity, then go listen to some schmuck show on NPR where you get your daily dose of seditiousness and cowardice. Because I am sick and tired of mincing words. Get my red, 'cause money's a man. All right, I'll be right back. In a recent report from the Heritage Foundation, David Kreutzer talks about the real cost to switch to a renewable energy standard. He joins us now to talk about it. Dr. Kreutzer, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. I'm glad to have this opportunity to tell you what we've been doing here at Heritage. At the Heritage Foundation Center for Data Analysis, we recently did a study on what the economic cost would be of going to renewable energy. In Washington at the moment, they're talking about various energy bills, and they tend to include something called a renewable electricity standard. And what this would do would be to set minimum levels of electricity that have to be produced from renewable sources, and they have to be approved renewable sources. For right now, the cheapest renewable source is something called onshore wind, and that is windmills that are on land. And what we've done is taken numbers from the Energy Information Administration and adjusted them to account for certain things, such as the fact that wind doesn't blow when you need it, and as everybody pretty much recognizes, has to be backed up by something like natural gas combustion turbines. And those are the least efficient form of natural gas electricity, and they only add to the cost. Our analysis shows that if we were to have 100% of a family of four's electricity from something cheap, from a conventional source like coal, the monthly bill would be $188. If they shift to wind onshore, it would be $339 per month. Offshore wind is more expensive yet at $400. Solar thermal, which is where they heat up with mirrors, they heat up a liquid to drive turbines, that would be $500 per month, again, compared to the $188 from coal. And using solar cells is even the most expensive at $717.
How did you come about these numbers?
Well, we took the number for the cheapest renewable source, that's the onshore wind. We said, what if we have to meet a renewable standard that's 3% in 2012? That is, 3% of the nation's electricity has to come from this renewable source in 2012. And we up that percent by 1.5% per year, so that by 2020, you have to have 15% of your renewable of electricity from renewable sources, and grows beyond that. And what we found is that by 2035, that's as far out as we went, adjusting for inflation, the electricity prices for households would go up by 36%. And it would force them to cut their use, of course, but they would still pay more. They'd pay about $300 per year more, even after they've made the adjustments, even after they've bought the more expensive appliances, turned down the thermostat, those sorts of things. What it does to the economy, because for industrial uses, the percent rise is 60% because they have less markup. So the percentage terms, it goes up much more. We find that employment drops by about 1 million jobs. That is, at any particular year, there'd be 1 million fewer jobs than if we didn't have this renewable electricity standard. GDP, that is gross domestic product, the broadest measure of national income, would drop by $5.2 trillion over that period. And on a family of four basis, adjusted for inflation, that's $2,400 per year. So people are presenting this renewable electricity standard as some sort of new wave, new future economic benefit that's going to help stimulate the economy and create jobs, when it is the exact opposite. It's going to cost us 1 million jobs. It's going to cost a typical family of four $2,400 in lost income.
This is unbelievable to me.
And it's not just our study. This is the one we came up with. These are the numbers we get using looking at the American economy. The president has pointed to Spain as an example of what we want to do. If we want to subsidize wind energy, for instance, or renewable energy. And for a while, Spain was able to make it look like they had a vibrant renewable energy industry. Though it's clear now that it isn't. A study by Gabriel Calzada from King Juan Carlos University a year or so ago did a study. He said for each new green job from the subsidies they have that they create, each new green job costs over two traditional jobs. Now, some people tried to smear him, saying his study wasn't done properly. But whether you like his study or not, you can't deny that Spain's unemployment rate has gone above 20%, and that as their economy is starting to tank, we see that the people in Spain, the government in Spain, saying we can't afford these subsidies for renewable electricity. So they, in essence, they've admitted the fraud. So supposedly at the beginning, we're saying we're going to create green jobs, we're going to stimulate the economy by subsidizing renewable electricity. But when the time gets tough, the truth comes out and they say we have to stop the subsidies. So we're hoping that the U.S. doesn't go down that path. We already have the experiment has been run. It's been run in Spain, and it doesn't work. We have run the numbers on our model, and we can make some estimates of how badly the experiment won't work. And that is electricity prices going up 36 to 60%, employment dropping by 1 million jobs, GDP losses $5 trillion over 25 years. And those numbers are pretty close to the numbers we got for cap and trade.
What do you think they should do?
Well, the solution is not to do something stupid, all right? And if a renewable electricity standard forces us to use an inefficient source of power, one that has a higher cost than elsewhere, that's going to restrict our economic growth, restrict our ability to create jobs, restrict our ability of industry to manufacture things. So we don't want to do that. If you're worried about the economy, you don't want a renewable electricity standard. Solar energy and wind energy both depend on natural forces to create electricity at the times that those natural forces, the wind and the sun, are available. The electric grid, however, can't operate that well. There's no viable storage technology for most of these wind farms or solar places that can store the electricity they generate when the wind is blowing or when the sun is shining. And as a consequence, for windmills, you have to have a backup source. And you have to have a backup source that can be turned on and off very quickly. That's not a big coal-powered plant. That's not a nuclear power plant. It's not the most efficient form of the natural gas power plant. It is, in fact, the least efficient form of natural gas, and that's called the conventional gas turbine. So using these conventional gas turbines to back up wind makes the wind that much more expensive. And, in fact, it's less environmentally efficient than the integrated combined cycle natural gas. That's a little wonky, perhaps. But there are forms of producing electricity with conventional fuels that are more efficient than the source we have to use to back up the wind. So you get a higher cost. You don't necessarily get that big of an environmental benefit. And you have to string wires thousands of miles sometimes to connect the wind farms to where people need the electricity. All of those add the cost, and that's going to drive up electricity rates.
Well, David Kreutzer, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Again, Michael, I want to thank you for having me on your show.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Lynn Woolley joins us now for an exclusive report.
I see a state that's in a lot of trouble, a state that wants to do something to protect itself, and it's passed a law, perfectly constitutional, Michael, in my opinion, because it simply gives concurrent jurisdiction. It's not overriding United States law. It's supporting United States law. It's simply a state that is so overridden with an invasion, whether you consider it peaceful or not, from another nation, and the federal government refuses to take its responsibility. So Arizona comes in and passes this law, and then you have this whole backlash. Well, this is racial profiling. Well, you know, what are we going to do? Go in there and send all those Canadians back to Canada that have been crossing the border illegally into Arizona? Of course, you would think that it would be people from Mexico. That's what the border of Arizona is with. It's not with Canada. So it just stands to reason that the people of Arizona have decided to use some logic here. And you know it's logical when John McCain turns around and he supports this type of thing. So, you know, it's just one of these deals where the federal government has been derelict of duty and the states have to come in and do it.
How could this be going on?
Well, Michael, the view is prevalent simply because there are a number of people who stand to gain from this. It's the same old story. The Democrats want cheap votes. The Republicans and some of the conservatives want cheap labor. But look, the state of Arizona is well within its rights. If you say this law is draconian or that it is somehow offensive or prejudicial toward the Mexican people, then what about the federal law? The only difference in these two laws, Michael, the state of Arizona is looking to enforce its law. The federal government is not enforcing its law, but these laws are very similar.
What kind of timeline are we looking at?
I think we can certainly put a time on that, Michael. As soon as politicians stop worrying about getting reelected, we can solve this very quickly. Look, in Texas, we have a governor named Rick Perry. He is known in some parts of the country as right-wing Rick, but he's not on this issue. Rick Perry is talking about border security, and he talks a lot. But Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, whom I support, don't misunderstand me. I support this guy because he's up against a liberal Democrat named Bill White. But Rick Perry signed a law here in the state of Texas that makes illegal immigrants eligible for in-state tuition in our state colleges and universities. Do you know why? Because Dallas, a former Republican stronghold, Houston, a former Republican stronghold, both are now very strong Hispanic majority cities. In Dallas, it's gone from every city official, county official, elected officials being Republican now to the bulk of them being Democratic, and that's because of the changing demographics. So Rick Perry is pandering to the Hispanic population. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And until such time when somebody comes in and convinces Rick Perry and certain other politicians, of which George W. Bush was certainly one, that we are not having changing demographics, okay, then they might want to enforce immigration. But as long as there is this gigantic, emerging Hispanic vote block, they're not going to change their minds on this.
What's happening now?
Well, I don't see anything happening until after the 2012 election. Barack Obama made a promise, a solemn promise, to that Hispanic voting bloc that helped get him elected, and he didn't mean it at the time, and he doesn't mean it now, and Rahm Emanuel certainly doesn't want him to do it. Look, this is divisive. You see 500,000 people marching in the streets, maybe across the entire United States, this May Day celebration that we just had. And you think, boy, it's a lot of people. But then you look at the polls. I saw Chris Matthews on Microsocialist NBC last night. And Matthews is just bemoaning the fact that the latest surveys he's seen have 6 in 10 Americans supporting the Arizona law. That's 60% of Americans, and it's more like 70% in the state of Arizona. So the great majority of people, and I can tell you, I live in a state that has a lot of Hispanic people, and they call my radio show, Michael, and they tell me, look, I came here legally. I'm a third-generation Hispanic Texan, American citizen, and I don't want people coming in across the border illegally. So a lot of that 60% nationally and 70% in Arizona that support this law are Hispanics, and a great percentage of these policemen that are being smeared by the Obamites as racist, a lot of those policemen are Hispanic, and a lot of those border officers, the great probably majority of them, down along the border of California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. A lot of those, like Ramos and Compeon, they are Hispanic. So I don't think the Obama administration is right to smear all of these people as racist. It's just not true.
What do you think they should do?
There are two lawmakers in Texas in the legislature, one a female from Houston and the other a male legislator from the Tyler area, both of whom say that they will introduce this legislation. They're both good people. They both believe in the sanctity of the United States. They were not some kind of a department store where people can just come in from south of the border and shop for an emergency room and shop for a school district that will teach a bilingual education and then have a baby here so that you can get that free and cheap citizenship. And that's great. But first of all, I don't think the lieutenant governor of this state, whose name is David Dewhurst, and who is a good guy, by the way, and I like him a lot, but I don't think in this political environment that he, as lieutenant governor, will bring this bill up to the floor. And he has the power to do that. The lieutenant governor in Texas is more powerful than the governor. And Rick Perry has already made it very well known he will not support an Arizona-style law. And the reasons that he gives, well, it's draconian, it would lead to racial profiling, and all of this stuff that if it would lead to racial profiling, we would already have a lot of it. I don't think people are going to be stopped on the way to the ice cream store, as Obama says, just because they're Hispanic. I think this is political. Rick Perry is not about to sign that bill. So you may see it in Oklahoma. You may see it in New Mexico. You're not going to see it in Texas.
So where do we go from here?
Michael, predicting the past is a lot easier than predicting the future. I don't know. I think in Arizona, you've got a situation where a great number of the people who oppose this bill are not legal and cannot vote. That is, they can't, not supposed to vote. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think Acorn is probably signing them up or has tried to sign them up. If the polls are true, if 70% of the people of Arizona support this bill, then the lawmakers who supported it in Arizona are in good shape. In Texas, I think Rick Perry will take a little bit of heat from his right base, his conservative base on this, but they're not going to go across the aisle and vote for Bill White, the former mayor of Houston, who presided over a sanctuary city and now denies it. So I don't know that I think it's going to have a whole lot of effect. I mean, Rahm Emanuel always wants to take a crisis and use it to the advantage of the Democratic Party. I don't think this is a crisis. I think you had a small fraction of the people out on the streets this year compared to what you had back in 2006. The passion isn't even there within the Hispanic community that there used to be. And the fact that they held up all these posters with swastikas on them and the violence that took place, this was supposed to happen at the Tea Parties. There's been no violence at the Tea Parties, but there's been violence at these illegal immigration rallies. And I think the general public that is not so inclined to go out and march in the street, I think they're noticing this.
Lynn Woolley, thanks for the report and for being on the Savage Nation.
Oh, you're very welcome, Michael. It's always a lot of fun to be on the Savage Nation.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Last year, as I have served as Solicitor General, my long-standing appreciation for the Supreme Court's role in our constitutional democracy has become ever deeper and richer.
On MichaelSavage.com. The next Harriet Myers, is that Kagan? The Daily Beast asks, how precisely is Kagan's prospective nomination different from George W. Bush's ill-fated attempt to put Harriet Myers on the nation's highest court? I wrote, Obama picks radical leftists with no judicial experience for Supreme Court. From England, Gordon Brown is stepping down as labor leader. For those of you who missed it, May 8th was my brother Jerome's birthday. In memoriam, Jerome, May 8th, 1944 to October 1969, from Brother Michael, for my silent brother. Gordon Brown stepping down as labor leader. May he become silent. Dem congressman, as dumb as they come, says dumb down climate science because Americans don't understand it. Yeah, bring it down to your own level. U.S. not cracking down on expired visas. No kidding. North Korean sank the South Korean warship with a submarine. U.S. ignores and shrinks from conflict. A deported immigrant from Africa won a $145,000 lawsuit. Did you hear that? After a radical judge along the lines of Kagan ruled that his civil rights have been violated, even though he's not a citizen, this drug dealer. This just in, Obama has lost almost half of his Jewish support. Really? And tied in with that, all on Michael Savage, left-wing U.S. Jews want Jewish state eliminated. In other words, they're self-destructive fools. The great war hero Netanyahu did it again. He caves in on Jerusalem construction. Exactly what I warned you. It's why he won't come on the show. Senior citizens in the state of Georgia told they can't pray before meals. Really? Huh. Sean Penn's dictator friend Hugo Chavez has put one of his critics in jail for 8 years. He's a retired general and one-time confidant of Presidente Hugo Chavez, but he was railroaded and sent to prison for 8 years. Thank you, Sean Penn, you putz, you. Stay in Haiti. Live in a mud hut. Obama attacks talk radio and other avenues of ideas. There are a record number of Americans on food stamps, 40 million. And on the bottom of MichaelSavage.com, there's awfully good stories. A starving yogi who says he has not eaten for 70 years or had any water, 83 years old, says he spent 70 years without food or water, has now astounded a team of military doctors who have studied him in a locked hospital room for 2 weeks where he has not eaten. He said he was blessed as a young boy by some fantasy princess. I don't understand that one.
I think that's going to be the basis of Michelle Obama's new childhood obesity program.
I think this could be the new Obamacare, which is if you only tap into your inner guru, you won't need any food or water, which will lower your carbon footprint. Well, Obama has nominated a radical, judgmental non-judge to the Supreme Court.
While we can't presume to replace Justice Stevens's wisdom or experience, I have selected a nominee who I believe embodies that same excellence, independence, integrity, and passion for the law, and who can ultimately provide that same kind of leadership on the court. Our Solicitor General and my friend, Elena Kagan. She's often referred to Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, for whom she clerked, as her hero. I understand that he reciprocated by calling her Shorty.
Well, apparently she wrote a senior thesis at Princeton on revolutionary socialism in New York City in the early 1930s. I guess she wants to bring some more of that to Washington, D.C.,
in the early 21st century.
I had the privilege of leading one of the world's great law schools and of working there to bring people together and to help ensure that they and the school were making the largest possible contribution to the public good, both in this country and around the world. I am proud of what all of us accomplished there. Mr. President, I look forward to working with the Senate in the next stage of this process, and I thank you again, Mr. President, for this honor of a lifetime. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Of course, Kagan and Obama go way back.
If you want to be having butter, that's in your hat. Definitely make a friend here when you're right. So for my personal part of you, think of every girl to marry you.
Here she is praising him back in 05.
It is my great pleasure to introduce Senator Barack Obama and to give him this award. I've actually known Barack for some number of years. Before I came to Harvard Law School, I was a professor at the University of Chicago Law School, where Senator Obama taught. He said a few words, and the place was mesmerized. You could have heard a pin drop. And in part, that's because of all these, rock star qualities that he has, the eloquence, the magnetism, the great looks, the brilliance. Everybody in that room, in that great hall, felt privileged. Felt privileged to be at the coming out party of someone who will be, and someone who deserves to be, and someone who the rest of us need to be.
And speaking of that, here's Obama coming out against talk radio once again.
With so many voices clamoring for attention on blogs and on cable and on talk radio, it can be difficult at times to sift through it all. Let's face it, even some of the craziest claims can quickly gain traction. I've had some experience in that regard. Fortunately, you will be well positioned to navigate this terrain.
And Nancy Pelosi claims we can't send the illegals back home.
The newcomers to America are really, again, important to the constant reinvigoration of America, which is part of who we are and have always been, unless we're all Native American. God bless them, but most of the people here came from someplace else. That we have to respect that dignity and worth and recognize that the church has an important role to play in that. We don't have, as a practical matter, we can't say to people, 12 million of you, go back to wherever you came from or go to jail. We can't do that.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. Play some music for a minute. Looking back at my parents, they went to a lot of weddings. They went to a lot of, like, births. We don't have anything like that out in California. No one gets married and no one's born. The children are manufactured in clinics over in Oakland with turkey basters. Most of the children born in Marin County came from a turkey baster and a mother. I never saw anything like it. So consequently, I'm not invited to births. I'm not invited. There's no funerals in California. That's another thing. People die and they disappear. New York was very serious. I mean, someone died. It was tragic and, respectful. No one likes to go to funerals, but you go. It was horrible, but you go. Today, you die and they're gone. The apartment's for rent. I don't even know if they have relatives out here. Mainly in the Bay Area, it's really bereft of any kind of culture or family ties, unless you're Chinese. The Chinese have amazing family structure in San Francisco. You see the funerals, they have the cars going down Columbus Avenue with a picture of the guy usually on the front with a big picture on the car, the family sitting in the, it looks like Jews from New York. I mean, it's very familiar to me. Of course, the Jews didn't have the picture on the front of the car. They missed that step. I mean, I think it's nice. He says, at least you see who's in the casket. Let's say you're a white guy standing picking your teeth after a bad squid and a rice meal. And all of a sudden, you hear the band coming down the street. They hire a band in North Beach out of the funeral parlor. What's the name of that? The Fugazi Funeral Parlor, I think, in Green Street. The Green Street Mortuary. And used to be all Italian funerals. Now it's mainly all Chinese funerals. But they hire a band. The band walks down the street, and everyone looks at the funeral. No one makes a joke of it. And you see the thing going by. It's nice to see the picture of the deceased on the front of the hearse. At least you know who's in the coffin there.
No longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
You go in the ground. It's not you. It doesn't apply to you. It's never going to happen to you because you're an American. Hey, I'm an American. You can't touch me. We don't die. We live forever in Disneyland. Our dogs live forever. Our dogs don't get arthritis. We all live in Disneyland in America. No one gets sick and nobody dies in America. Hey, I'm an American. You can't touch me. I'll go to the embassy. I'll go to the embassy when Dr. Death comes for me. Yeah, right. You'll go to the embassy. Anyway, here we are. We're all wonderful. We're all great. At the end of the day, we're nothing.
Savage.